Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on how would Jesus vote for president, right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something's wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. The Ten Commandments are banned from our public institutions. The Ten Commandments are banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we now see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And we teach the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, in our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national consciousness. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Now, are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion? That's right. Your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, as evidenced by the fact that they put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And boys and girls, that's not separation of church and state. Now, you know, there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties, as well as the 33 benefits that we receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. And you don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or the Common Law or Natural Law, or we call it karma, or we call it something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Now, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, let's go to the website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, we're talking about how would Jesus vote for president? I mean, after all, 65% of you people listening to me on average go to church every Sunday. Americans are very religious people. Only 15% of Europeans go to church, and they're Catholics mainly. So Catholicism doesn't attract people to church like Americans are attracted to church. Here in America, we call ourselves evangelicals, or at least 70 million of us do. That's a big chunk of people. You know, you take 70 million people out of 300 million, you know, it's not quite a third, but it's, you know, 25%. 7, 14, 21, 28, that'd be a little less than 25% of us are evangelical Christians. And then there's a whole bunch of other Christians out there. And all these Christians, you know, claim that they're following God and the Bible And they're sincere people. I'm not questioning anybody's sincerity, whether you're a Catholic, a Protestant, a Jew, you know, or a Muslim, or whatever you are, you know, you're probably pretty sincere people. But the world's full of a lot of problems. And one of the problems that we have here is war. War is going on all over the world. And our politicians are talking about peace, peace, when there is no peace. Now, Jesus, he had a war policy. I don't know if you ever knew this before, or whether you've ever thought about it before, but, you know, Jesus is called the Prince of Peace. I can't for the life of me understand why Jesus is called the Prince of Peace. I don't know why he isn't called the Prince of War. I mean, that would be a more apt title for it. Listen to this. In Matthew, this is one of the Gospels, so you Christians can listen to this, all right? I know you can't listen to the Old Testament because that's been abolished and done away with, nailed to the cross with Jesus. But this is Matthew. This is New Testament stuff. Over in Matthew 10, verse 34, here's Jesus. If you've got a red-letter Bible, it'll be in red letters right there. See, it's a direct quotation right from the boss himself. Come right from the horse's mouth. He said, "Think not." Think not. Translated into English, that means don't think. Forget it. Don't you believe it. Tain't so. He said, "Think not that I've come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword." Hey, kids, I didn't write that. So, you know, don't get mad at me and send me an email now and say, "Gordon, you warmongering SOB." I didn't write that. I'm a reporter. I just happen to be prowling around through the pages of the Bible. I don't listen to preachers very often. That's because they lie all the time. There's two great lying professions in the world. Politics is number two. Preaching is number one. The greatest liars that God ever put breath into come from the clergy. The politicians learned it from them. So you got these two great lying professions. You can't believe anything they say, but they don't lie to you all the time. That's the genius of the deception. See, if they lied to us all the time, we'd always know the truth. If they told us the truth all the time, we'd always know the truth. The cleverness of the deception is that they tell us the truth 75% of the time. And then they lie to us 25% of the time. And then they mix the truth with the lies so that they keep us deceived 100% of the time. And I can tell you it's 100% because that's what God himself said. He said that over in Revelation 12, verse 9. He said the whole world is deceived. Whole. W-H-O-L-E. Whole. The whole world is deceived. Now, if that statement is true, that includes you and me. I include myself in with those that are deceived. As I've said in the past, you know, hardly a day goes by that I don't learn something new. I mean, I'm an old man. I thought that by the time I got to be 50, I'd know it all. Hell, I thought I knew it all by the time I was 19. And then I got to be about 30, and I said, oh, there's a couple things I missed. So I got real busy, and I started listening and paying attention, you know, from 30 to 40. And by the time I got to be 40, I learned a bunch more. And then I got to be 40. I thought, well, I probably just about have it all down pat. And then I met A.J. Porth. He invited me into his office. He says, "Son, you want me to teach you about checks?" And I said, "Yes, sir, Mr. Porth. Why don't you teach me about checks? I walked out of there. I've never been the same since. I was 40. I thought I knew something. Then I got to be 50, then 60. Now I'm pushing 70. Now I've come to the conclusion that I really don't know very much. Old Oliver Wendell Holmes was asked that one time by his law clerk. He says, "Hey, Mr. Holmes," he said, "you're the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. How much law do you know?" And Holmes said, "I don't know very much law." And the law clerk, he is pretty surprised about that, you know. He said, "Well, my God, you're the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Surely you must know lots of laws." "No, I really don't know very much." But he said, "I'm God-awful good at the little bit that I do know. I'm God-awful good at the little bit I do know." I like that. And I said, you know, that's about true you know, a lot of us, you know, we're pretty good at the little bit of something that we know, but, you know, stop and take a look at the world and all the knowledge that's out there. We don't really know very much. Politicians know it all, though, and they tell you that. They come up there, you know, this guy Mitt Romney, he's telling you, boy, you want to elect me because I know all about economics. John McCain says, you want to elect me because I know all about foreign policy. I'm a warrior. I'm a soldier. I know about war. You know, you want to elect me because I can handle that war in Iraq. I can handle that war in Afghanistan. Hillary Clinton says, you know, no. You don't want to elect those guys. You want to elect me because I'm experienced. I'm the experienced candidate. And then Barack Obama comes along and says, well, we've been listening to these experienced people all this time, and so far, look where they've led us. Why don't you vote for me? I don't know my ass from a hot rock. But at least I'm telling you the truth. Which is, he's got a point there, you know. I mean, the kid says, well, I don't really know much, but, you know, when you want some change here, why don't you elect somebody that's going to make a change? Unfortunately, he's one of the establishment candidates, so I didn't care too much for him either. But I came to the conclusion, I said, well, what would Jesus do? How would Jesus deal with that war in Iraq? How would Jesus have dealt, had he been president of the United States, would we be at war in Iraq today? You know, some of you are saying, no, if Jesus was president, we wouldn't be at war in Iraq. And then there's another group of people, yes, sir, we'd be at war with those commies over in Iraq, and because it's a righteous war, and because we need to be defended against terrorists. I don't know what your take on it is, but yeah, Jesus has a war policy. Did you know that? Now, the war policy comes out of Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20, so I thought I'd just bring up the war policy statute over here and tell you what the biblical policy on war is. Did you know that there's a policy in the Bible on war? I mean, there's a lot of laws in the Bible about war and how to conduct them and who to conduct them with and how to conduct yourself prior to the war, during the war, and after the war, and how to deal with soldiers and military conscription and the draft. Did you know that? I've never heard a preacher ever turn to the Bible and say, let's take a look in the Bible and see what God tells us about war. John McCain, you know, he says, you want to listen to me because I'm a warrior. So I got to thinking about that one day, and I said, well, the God of the Bible, you know, he's kind of a warrior too. Did you know that? He pictures himself. Take a look at Revelation chapter 1 and 2. I mean, here's Jesus. He says he's coming back on a white horse, and he's going to carry a sword in his hand, and he's going to start slaying people. He's going to kill a whole bunch. Did you know that? Did you know that sweet Jesus was going to kill a whole bunch of people when he comes back? Yes, sir, Bob. Did you know that Jesus is a trained warrior, that he's a killer? Do you know that Jesus has probably killed more human beings than any other? I'll go so far as to tell you, Jesus Christ of Nazareth has killed more human beings than Genghis Khan, Joe Stalin, Adolf Hitler combined. So when Jesus tells you in Matthew 10, verse 34, think not that I've come to send peace on earth. I came to send a sword. You know, maybe we ought to listen to his side of the story once. Did you ever stop and think about that? Because war is kind of serious business. You know, people get killed in wars. And Americans are getting real tired of that war over in Iraq. And if Jesus was president when that war began, that war would be over today. It would have been over in about 3 weeks. Well, maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe it would have taken him 3 months, but we wouldn't be there 3 years. And I can tell that from Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20. So why don't you write that section down? That's the war chapter in the Bible. Did you know that? There's a chapter just devoted to war. Tells you this is the way you conduct a war. When you're coming to the party, this is what you need to bring as a present. So listen to the story. I'll give you the story first, and then we'll comment on it. In Deuteronomy 20, this is Deuteronomy, fifth book of the Bible, written by Moses, actually written by God himself. God Almighty wrote the entirety of the scripture, but he used a secretary. He had a secretary by the name of Moses. Moses is a pretty good old boy, and he wrote this down. It's in chapter 20, the first 20 verses. And it says, when you go out to battle against your enemies, and you see horses and chariots and a people more than thou, when you see great odds like the Germans over there, and then God, they got this powerful military machine, he says, be not afraid of them, because the Eternal your God is with you, the God which brought you up out of the land of Egypt. And it shall be, when you are come nigh unto the battle, that the priest shall approach and speak unto the people and say unto them, hang on here a second. Wait a minute. You mean to tell me that you're going to call the army chaplain out here? Did you hear that statement? It shall come to pass when you're come nigh unto the battle, when you're out on the battlefield, and there's the other guys over there, and here's our guys over here, that the priest shall approach and speak unto the army. Ah, hell. We know better than that. If you saw the motion picture Patton, you know the general goes out and speaks to the troops. Doesn't he? Well, okay, that's Patton. He went out and he spoke to the troops, but I just wanted to point out that God told you, and when you come nigh unto the battle, it's the priest that goes out and speaks to the troops. Now, what's the priest going to tell them when he gets out there? There's a message here. And he shall say unto them. Got that? Now, here's your creator. He comes along and says, now, when you get ready to go to war here, kids, and when we get ready to go to battle over here, that we're going to have a speech, and the speech is going to be carried out by the priest, not the general, not the president, not the Congress, not the Joint Chiefs of Staff, not the Pentagon. The priest, he's going to go out and he's going to tell you, boys, for me. He's got a message. It's coming from me. And he shall say, hear, O Israel, you approach this day unto battle against your enemies. Let not your hearts faint, and fear not, and do not tremble, and neither be you terrified because of them. Because the Eternal your God is he that goeth with you to fight for you against your enemies to save you. Now that's the message. Every time when you go to battle, the priest is to come out onto the battlefield first, before General Patton, before the president, before the Congress, before Nancy Pelosi. And he's got a message. And this is the message that he's to give to the soldiers before they go into battle. And the message is, sit back and relax, boys, because I'm with you. And when I'm with you, we're going to win. Now, there's a number of examples here in the scripture. I got to put a little check mark right here. Let me just make a little mark right here. And over in Leviticus 26, let's see if I can find Leviticus 26. General Jackson did this. Remember Andrew Jackson? Well, Andrew Jackson, he went down to New Orleans. You know, he was a general. And he went down to New Orleans, and he had about 1,000 guys, 989 guys, and he took on a British army down there of 10,000. And whipped them. He only had 1,000. He was outnumbered 10 to 1. Can you believe this? He's outnumbered 10 to 1. Now, normally, all you soldiers out there, now listen up. Now, you all know this, because you were told this when you went to basic training. When we attack, we have to have 3 to 1 superiority. Remember that? They told you that. When we attack, we have to have 3-to-1 superiority. Now, here's General Jackson. He attacks the British, and he's got 10-to-1 in superiority. Now, Jackson had a lot of gonads, and he said that we're going to go out here and whip them. And in verse 7, here's what your God told you. He said, and you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. 5 of you shall chase 100. And 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. Now, in ordinary military terms, we look at General Jackson down at New Orleans and we say, oh, he was outnumbered by 10 to 1. Oh, no. No. No, children, you need to learn to count. You've been to public school for too long. General Jackson had a 10 to 1 superiority over the British. You see, General Jackson had 1,000 troops. See if we can do the math here. He had 1,000 soldiers. The British had 10,000. General Jackson had the British outnumbered by 10 to 1. Now let's do the math. God said in verse 8, 5 of you shall chase 100. And 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight. Jackson only needed 100 to put 10,000 to flight. Hell, he had 1,000. He had 10 times more soldiers than he needed. Now, I haven't got time here to go through all of the examples in the scripture, but we had a soldier, we had a general one time by the name of Gideon. His name was General Gideon. And the angel came down to Gideon. He said, no, these enemies you have, I forgot who they're fighting against now. I'll think of them here in a minute. Anyway, there was a bunch of them out there, and he said, now we need to throw these jerks out of our country. And Gideon, he was a little nervous. He wasn't, he hadn't been trained at West Point, you know. He's being called to be a general, but he hadn't been trained for 4 or 5 years there, and so he was kind of a novice general. And the angel said to him, he said, well, we need to go out here and select an army. And he said, I want you to go down here, and I want you to call up the Israelites and have them come down. And you say to him, well, now all of you, about 30,000 of them showed up. About 30,000 Israelites showed up for the battle. Kind of like 9/11, you know, right after the attack. Americans get real patriotic and they all want to run down and join the army. They run down to join the draft, you know. To beat the draft, they run down and join the army. That's what happened after Pearl Harbor. Americans, people all over the world, you know, British, English guys probably did the same thing. So they run down, they want to join the army. Well, in this case here, 30,000 showed up, and so the angel looked at them, and he said to Gideon, he said, why, these people, there's a bunch of them out there that are, they're cowards. And so he said, all of you that are weak, need, and faint-hearted, pack up and go home. And about 20,000 of them packed up and went back home, left about 10,000 left. And so, now it's they're getting kind of thin in the ranks, and so the angel said to Gideon, he says, you know, there's a bunch of these guys over here that I think are probably not good military material. So he said, have them go down here to this creek, and let's watch these guys drink water. So he said, have them all go down there and take a drink. He says, all the people that drink out of the creek, tell them to go home, and all the people that drink out of their hands, you know, scoop the water out of the creek into their hands and drink out of their hands, those are the ones you want to select. And so when it was all said and done, they picked them all out, and it was 300. 300! And so then the angel took a look at these 300 guys, and he said, now, General Gideon, that's the army that we're going to go out and take on 135,000 Midianites. See how many that is. 130, when the story is all told, you know, it's in the book of Judges, 135,000 divided by 300 is 450. They went out and destroyed the Midianite army. They were outnumbered 450 to 1. And the reason that God did this, he told Gideon, he said, the reason that we're going to destroy this Midianite army and that we're outnumbered 450 to 1 is because if you guys went out there and defeated their army with 30, 50, 100,000 people, you'd say, well, it was because of our superior generalship. It was because we had General Patton on our side. It was because we had Erwin Rommel fighting for us. That's why we won, because our generals are so damn smart. He said, now, we're going to go out and we're going to whip 135,000. We're going to go out to war and we're outnumbered 450 to 1. And when you guys get through, you'll know that this war was fought and won by the God of Abraham. He said, I just didn't want you guys to think that you were as brave or that you were as militarily savvy as you think you are. Now, we Americans, you know, we think we're pretty military savvy guys. I don't know, you went over here and took on the fourth largest army in the world over here in Iraq, and you're bogged down over there. You did that over in Vietnam and didn't work out worth a hoot. And that's because our God isn't fighting for us. That's what the bottom line is. You don't have the God of Abraham over in Iraq and Afghanistan fighting for you. Oh, you got your generals over there. Oh, you got your soldiers, and you got your nuclear weapons, and your B-1 bombers, and you got all of your military hardware. You haven't got God working for you. And that's why you're not doing too good over there. But there's more to the story. Going back here to Deuteronomy 20 now, he says, "Let not your hearts faint, fear not, because the Eternal your God is he that goeth to war with you, to fight for you against your enemies, to save you. And the officers then shall speak unto the soldiers," the people sang, "What man is there that has built a new house and has not dedicated it? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man dedicate it." All right, so now, if you have built a house within the last year, And you have not dedicated your house, then you go on back home. We don't want you out here on the battlefield. Second, and what man is it that has planted a vineyard and has not eaten from it? It takes 5 years to plant a vineyard and eat from it. So if you've planted grapes and you haven't eaten off that vineyard within the last 5 years, go on back home, son. We don't want you in this battle. Let him also go and return unto his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man eat it. And what man is there that has betrothed a wife and has not taken her? Let him go and return to his house, lest he die in the battle, and another man take her. So if you're a young man and you have a wife, if you've had a wife and you have not lived with her for 1 year, you go on back home, son, and we don't want you in this battle. So there's certain people that go to war, and there's certain people that don't. Not just everybody in the Army of Israel goes to war. Now, we here in the United States, you know, we've got young men over here with their wives back home. They have not lived with their wives for a year. We've got people, we take them and we send them off to the battlefield. And of course, they're all volunteers. You got to admit that. But then, you know, all of these people are volunteers. You know, the Israelites never operated with a conscripted army from the day of Moses forward. Did you know that? I mean, we've had kings, you know, that drafted us, but not God. God has never drafted anybody into the army. In fact, he tells you very plainly right here, not everybody is qualified for military service. And then he says, "And the officers shall speak further unto the people, and they shall say, What man is there that is fearful and faint-hearted?" Weak-kneed chickens, you know, how many of those are there? "Let him go and return unto his house, lest his brethren's heart faint as well as his heart. And it shall be, when the officers have made an end of speaking unto the people, that they shall make captains of the armies to lead the people. And when you come nigh unto the city to fight against it, then proclaim peace unto it." You come up to them and you say, "Okay, you people inside this city, hey, you guys over there on the other side of the creek, we're going to proclaim peace to you. It's time for you to lay down your arms. Time for you to surrender. Get your white flags up. And sit down and shut up." You know, now if President Bush were following this, he would have said to the Iraqis back, you know, about, I guess it was 2001, wasn't it? Or two, or I guess it was 2003 with the Iraqis. He would have said, okay, Hussein, all of you Iraqis over there, I want you to surrender. And I want you to lay down your arms. Now, and it shall be, and if it make you answer of peace. So if they say, okay, we'll lay down our arms and open unto you, then it shall be that all the people that is found therein shall be tributaries unto thee, and they shall serve you. So now if the Iraqis want to lay down their arms and declare that they're going to surrender, they shall be tributaries. And then we can go over there and we can take their oil and we'll take their ground. and they'll work for us, and everything will just be honky dory. All right. And if it will make no peace with you, but will make war against you, then you shall besiege that city. And when the Eternal your God has delivered that city into your hands, you shall smite, that means kill, you're gonna kill, every male thereof with the edge of the sword. Now, the Iraqis said, hell no, we won't go. Do you remember that? Hell no, we won't go. And they put up a little struggle, it wasn't much, but they put up a little struggle over there. And when we got to Baghdad, now here was the rule when we got there. We should have killed every male Iraqi within the borders of Iraq. Did you get that? No, I didn't write that. I'm just reporting to you what the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, what sweet Jesus, you know, sweet Jesus, the King of Peace, told you to do. This is the war chapter. When you go to war, Mr. Bush, when you go to war, Joint Chiefs of Staff, the God of Israel says this is the way you deal with your enemies. Let me read that to you again. And when the Eternal your God has delivered it into your hands, when you have defeated their army, that you shall smite every male thereof with the edge of the sword, but the women and the little ones and the cattle and all that is in the city, even all the spoil thereof, shall you take unto yourself. And you shall eat the spoil of your enemies, which the Eternal your God has given you. Thus shall you do unto all the cities which are very far off from you, which are not of the cities of these nations, but of the cities of these people, which the Eternal your God does give you for an inheritance. You shall save alive nothing that breatheth. Now, boy, that's a tough one. You shall save alive nothing. Now, there was a story about old King Saul, and I forgot exactly where this is located. It's in 1 or 2 Kings, I believe it is. I'd have to look it up now, but I'll just paraphrase it for you. Old King Saul, you know, he goes down, he's given instructions. Oh, it's in 1 Samuel, that's where it's at. And he's to go down to the Amalekites and to destroy them. And he's to kill everything. Men, women, children. I mean, little babies sucking at their mama's breasts. He was instructed. Kill them all. And kill all their dogs and all their cats and all their pigs and chickens and horses and cows and goats and sheep. Kill them all. Everything that breatheth. He couldn't do it. He couldn't handle it. He couldn't do it. So he went down and he whipped them. And he took them prisoner and captive, and he brought them up with their horses and cattle and some. Samuel, this is the chief priest now, he said, hey, what's this bleating of sheep I'm listening to? And King Saul said, well, I brought them up here for sacrifices, and we took the spoil. But you couldn't do what God told you to do, huh? And that's what I reported to you in the last story. I said, you know, we were given our marching orders. We were told how to deal with the Mexicans in Texas and the Mexicans in California. We were told what to do with the Treaty of Guadalupe, and we couldn't do it. And so God said, well, okay, well, since you can't follow instructions, what I thought to do to them is what I'm going to do to you. If you can't do what I tell you, then what I tell you to do to them is what I'm going to do to you. So now, boys and girls, just want to tell you, we were told, and we didn't do it. Now, you can expect the Chinese, when they come over here, they are going to carry out what it was that we were to carry out and didn't. Boy, that's going to be bloody. That's not going to be fun. Now, the worst thing that can happen to an Israelite is that you get our God on our ass, and that's bad news. It's all right when the Japs are doing it. The Japanese, you know, when they attacked Pearl Harbor, that war was over on December the 7th, 1941. When the Japs attacked Pearl Harbor, for the Japanese, it was all over. And it's because we had a covenant, we had a contract with our God. He had to defend us. And he did. And when it was all said and done, we whipped them. And then there was an outcome from World War II that we were supposed to carry out, and we didn't do it. And had we carried it out, we would have put to the sword every male Japanese in those islands. Hey, you talk about kind and gentle here, kids. I'm telling you that if Jesus was running for president, you couldn't vote for him. Why, all of you listening to me right now, you are absolutely revulsed. You're sitting there saying to yourself, oh my God, this guy Gordon's a lunatic. Hell, I didn't write this. Go read it for yourself. Let me read this one for you again. Now you know that Jesus is the Prince of Peace. Your preacher has told you that time and time again. Your preacher has drilled into you that Jesus is the King of Peace. That Jesus loves peace. That Jesus is against war. Oh, no, he ain't. No. Let me read it to you again. It's over here in Matthew 10, verse 34. He says, think not that I've come to send peace on earth. I didn't come here to send peace. I came here to send war. Now, you take a look around the world today, and you tell me where there's peace. Well, Stockholm, Sweden, of course, and Oslo, Norway. Those people up there in Norway and Sweden have a little better handle on how to follow these war statutes, the people in Switzerland do. You know, the Swiss and the Swedes and the Norwegians, well, the Norwegians kind of got it in World War II, but the Swedes and the Swiss, you know, they did pretty well. Those people butt out of everybody else's business. You don't see the Swedes, you know, running around the world trying to spread democracy in Uganda. You don't see the Swedes over in North Korea raising hell over there, or over in Iraq or Iran or someplace. They, you know, they do business around the world, and they mind their business and then mind their P's and Q's. And hell, them Swedes, the Swiss, they're just like them. They're both Israelites. Those two tribes of Israel, the only two, by the way. The only two, well, the Norwegians are pretty good, and the Finns ain't bad, you know, that can mind their own business. The English and the Americans can't. We can't mind our business. We cannot rest until we have taught everybody else in the world how to live their lives. And of course, the rest of the people in the world, you know, they're sitting around and they're going, well, we're not really too sure we like these Americans telling us how to live our lives. Hey, kids, I'm a little over time. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and they're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information about that program, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Now, if you'd like to order one, just call us direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, or mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. 67. All right, going back here now to the war chapter. That's Deuteronomy 20, verses 1 through 20. There's also a penal clause chapter in the Bible. That's Deuteronomy 28, verses 15 through 68. There are certain chapters here in the Bible that cover certain subjects. You know, if you want to look at the chapter on insurance, well, then you go to Exodus chapter 21, verses 28 through 36, which deals with negligence and limited liability insurance, is what we call it today. And if you want to look at war, you look at Deuteronomy chapter 20. If you want to look at the penal clause of the contract, you look at Deuteronomy chapter 28. In other words, there's various sections in the Bible that tell you these stories. And all I did was I just took a look at some of these big issues like the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and said, well, gee, how would Jesus handle that? And so I went to the war chapter, and that's what I'm reading to you now. And the law requires, and he says, you shall save nothing alive that breathes, but you shall utterly destroy them, namely the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, as the Eternal your God has commanded you, that they teach you not to do after all the abominations which they have done unto their gods. So should you sin against the Eternal your God, when you shall besiege a city a long time in making war against it to take it, you shall not destroy the trees thereof by forcing an axe against them, because you mayest eat of them. And you shall not cut them down, for the tree of the field is man's life, to employ them in the siege. Only the trees which you knowest that they are not trees for meat, you shall destroy and cut them down. And you shall build bulwarks against the city that maketh war against thee until it be subdued. So don't you cut down the date trees. Don't you cut down the orange trees, the apple trees, and the cherry trees. You cut down the pine trees and the fir trees and the redwood trees. You know, just a little sidelight there. I didn't write that. I just thought I'd tell you that that was an instruction that we got. Now, there's two ways to deal with your enemies. Now, let's just picture this for a minute. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion here, the Jews are just constantly fighting against the Palestinians, and the Palestinians are just constantly fighting against the Jews. Let's suppose now, for the sake of our discussion, that the Jews are the people of God. They're on God's team. How would the Jews deal with the Palestinian problem? Well, starting way back in 1948, when they came in and occupied the land, there was a solution to the problem. Or in 1967 or 1973, and probably 15 times after that, you've had an opportunity, you Jews over there, to solve the problem. Now, the ultimate end to what's going to happen to you Jews over there is you're going to be destroyed from off the land. And you're going to be destroyed because you wouldn't obey these laws. And America, you're going to be destroyed from off the land because you would not follow these laws. Now, it's not that way because I say it's that way. I cannot bring it to pass. I'm not going to bring it to pass. I can't advance it. I can't slow it down. I can't prevent it. And I can't ensure it. But it's going to happen to you anyway. Not because I say so, but because the God of heaven said so. And then this guy says, there isn't anybody going to deliver you out of his hand. Hey, you haven't got any generals over here that are going to deliver you out of the hand of the living God. He told you that very plainly. Now, if you had handled this correctly over there, there wouldn't be any Palestinian problem because there wouldn't be any Palestinians there. They'd all be dead. That's bad news for the Palestinians, but you know, here's your choice. You know, you can lay down your arms and surrender or die. Now, that tells you a little something about the war-making policy of Jesus of Nazareth. He doesn't take prisoners. There's no prisoner of war camps in this operation. Now, he says he's coming back to planet Earth. And he says there's going to be a bunch of people fight against him. And it's described here in the book of Revelation. It's quite a little story. You know, you sit there and read it, you know, for yourself. And you can read the name Jesus, and you can see, well, he says he's going to destroy them with the sword of his mouth. He's going to destroy them with this or that. I mean, there's a real physical destruction coming down here. It's called the Great Tribulation here in the Bible. Now, if you think, if you're one of these alien soldiers, that when he comes down here and fights against you, that he's going to take any prisoners, and that you can, you know, when times get tough, you can run up the white flag and say, okay, we've had enough. You got your head up the wrong end there, son. This guy don't take prisoners. And if you want to see some examples in the scripture, you go back, you Christians now can tune out because you're out of this game. But you Jews can tune in. Just go back to Jericho, for instance. I mean, Rahab and her family were saved out of Jericho. And you know, go back to Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, we had Lot and his two daughters survived out of Sodom. I mean, there's always some survivors. But there's no prisoners. So, you know, and he told us to do the same thing. Now, if you guys, you know, just picturing you Jews over there just for a minute, let's suppose that rockets are coming out of Gaza. And so you surround Gaza and you say, okay, now you guys over there, lay down your arms and surrender. We're going to come in and we're going to take over. And they give you some static. So you come in there with all the military force that you can muster, and I suspect you could probably subdue them, and you take every male in Gaza and you kill them. Do you think that the rest of them Palestinians on the West Bank would get the picture? We don't take prisoners. Now, you see, you Jews are sitting over there and saying, well, my God, we can't do that because the Americans are chief allies over here. They wouldn't sit still for it. That's probably true. And as long as you Jews have America as your protectors, you can expect total destruction. You were told to rely on your God. And when the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is fighting for you, he will destroy your enemies. And you don't need the United States of America or Canada or the United Nations or anybody else. And when the Israelites went into Palestine the first time, you know, we didn't have the United Nations, and we didn't have any great big brothers, you know, like we had the French, you know, to help us whip the British back in the Revolutionary War. We had our God. We didn't have any problems there. We went in there and we just kicked butt, and that was the end of the argument. But we didn't take any prisoners either. Now, there was a mistake made. Now, let me tell you what the mistake was made back in ancient times. And we made the same mistake over here in Iraq and Afghanistan and with the Japanese and the Germans and everybody else. So it's over here in Judges. Judges chapter 2, I believe it is. And it starts in Judges chapter 1, and it says here, 1 verse 27, I believe it is. It says, neither did Manasseh drive out the inhabitants of Beth-shean and her towns. And it came to pass, when Israel was strong, that they put the Canaanites to tribute, and they did not utterly drive them out. And you Jews, you know, when you won the war in 67 and you won the war in 73, you did not drive the Palestinians out. Which is what you were told to do. That's the example that you were given. Now here's the bottom line. In chapter 2 it says, an angel from the Eternal came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and I have brought you into the land which I swore unto your fathers, and I said, I'll never break my covenant with you. And you shall make no league, that you shall make no covenant, you shall make no treaty with the inhabitants of this land, you shall throw down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Now why have you done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. Now take a look at Gaza and the West Bank. The Palestinians are a thorn in your sides and a snare unto you, and they will ultimately destroy you because you did not drive them out like you were told. You got that? Now, while we're on the subject here of treaties. We have a thing here called the North American Treaty Organization, and now NATO is over in Afghanistan. Now, NATO is made up primarily of Israelite countries. Makes all the sense in the world for us Israelites to band together. The Americans, the Canadians, the Australians, the British, the French, the Dutch, the Germans. You know, all of those are Israelite people. And there's a couple of them that butted out. Now, there's a couple. That's Switzerland. They don't belong to NATO. And Sweden. God love those Swiss and them Swedes. The only people that can obey God and keep His commandments. And I don't know whether the Swiss and the Swedes are smart enough to know that they need to obey God and keep His commandments or not. I doubt it. But for some reason, they are. And there's a benefit that comes from it. The Swiss don't have any race riots running around in their streets, and they don't have any problems with the United Nations. They don't have any problems with soldiers in Iraq. They don't have terrorists blowing up their buildings around. You know, we Americans are sitting over here terrified, just stark raving terrified that some terrorist is going to come over and blow up an airplane. The Swiss aren't. The Swedes aren't. They're not living in a police state environment. You know, when you go down to catch an airplane in Stockholm, they're not looking up your butt to see if you're carrying explosives. That's here in the United States. Well, you know, when you go messing around with people, you know, then they start messing around with you. I pointed that out to you the other day. You know, if you're looking for a fight, just walk in the bar, sidle up to some guy sitting at the bar, throw a beer in his face and see what happens. Hell, the fight's on. Go over to Iraq, throw some beer in their face, and the fight's on. Now, if you went over there, you know, you want to spread some terror to everybody, you just kill every male in the country, and then say, hey, boys and girls, and then you withdraw from the country, you'll stay over there and occupy it. You know, we could have went over there and probably killed every male in Iraq in I don't know, 3-4 months. And then just pull out of the country and say, okay, now, listen. Anybody else messes with us Americans over there, do you see what we just did to you? Now, you know, mess with us. You Iranians over there, do you see what we just did in Iraq? Now, let's tell you how this is going to be played out. We don't think you guys ought to have nuclear weapons. And then we think you ought to voluntarily disband that program over there. And then we're only going to tell you once. And if you listen up, fine. If you don't listen up, okay. Now, you guys take a vote and figure out what you want to do. And you do the same thing with the North Koreans and anybody else. You know, when it comes down to where peace push comes to shove, if you're going to go to war, you go to war, and when you finish the war, then you don't leave any of your enemies alive. Well, it could be you kill them all. Could be you kill all the males. Could be they lay down their arms and we put them to tribute. Now, there's another side to this coin over here. Did you know that the only time you go to war is when God authorizes it? That's the other side of the coin. And I don't think that God authorized this war in Iran, I mean, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. See, that's the other side of the coin. Now, you could argue, well, it was that Al-Qaeda gang over here that attacked our trade towers. I don't think that's true. I think that was a false flag operation. And if it was done by the Afghanis, then it was a simple matter. You go over there and tell them this is where it's going to be. And if they don't pay attention, I know somebody's going to say, well, you know, gosh, all those innocent Afghani men, women, and children, hell, it was their government did it. Well, you know, okay. I don't write these biblical passages and these statutes in here. I'm just telling you, go read it for yourself, and then there's your marching orders. And we took a look at it and said, well, surely God could not have meant that. And so we kind of read into it what God meant. And then we got all these preachers over here saying, well, but that doesn't mean that. And don't you believe that. And don't you follow the Bible. You follow your church. You follow your priest. You follow your preacher. Follow your priest. You know, the guy that's a pedophile and a sodomite. That's the guy you want to follow. Well, okay, kids, that's, you do what you gotta do, but when it's all said and done, there's an outcome that comes from it. And the outcome that's coming from it isn't going to be good. Now, if you think sweet Jesus is the Prince of Peace and you just get after it, but I told you, I read to you, I showed you, he told you in the first person. He said, don't you believe it. I am not the Prince of Peace. I didn't come to bring peace to the earth. I came to bring war. Now, you take a look around the world, boys and girls, and you just ask yourself, well, what do you have here, peace or war? And who succeeded at what he said he was going to do? Now, sweet Jesus has succeeded beyond his wildest expectations. We've got war everywhere. We've got hate and discontent everywhere. And there's a solution to that. And the solution is, it's time for us to sit down, shut up, fold our hands, and do what we're told for a change. And then there will be some survivors. And those of you that just have to meddle in everybody else's business, well, there's a solution for you too. And it's called death. D-E-D. Dead. And if that's what it's going to take, well, then that's what the boss is going to bring. Well, now, I got about a minute left, so let me run down the list over here. We've talked about immigration, NATO, CETO, healthcare, the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, overseas military bases, domestic military base closing, defense spending, Medicare, Medicaid, AIDS research, Alzheimer's disease, cancer research, health insurance, and the environment, and income tax, Federal Reserve, paper money, clad coin, inflation, separation of church and state, school prayer, freedom of religion. The Bible talks about all of these subjects. All of these things that are major political issues in the United States of America. Never one of them answered in the Bible. Told you exactly how to deal with it. And when we had a president like General Jackson, who said, okay, well, let's follow the God of Israel, we had a pretty good success. Not that Jackson ever followed everything God told us, we never have. But at least years ago, we used to do some things that God told us to do, and we got some pretty good results. When we used gold and silver coin in this country, we became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world. And then when we got a central bank under the Communist Manifesto, we've become the world's number one debtor nation. Now, when we talk about economic policy, Mitt Romney says, vote for me because I understand the economy. Did Mitt Romney ever say he was going to bring you gold and silver coin? Ron Paul did. You know, if I had to choose between Mitt Romney and Ron Paul on economic issues, I'd have to choose Ron Paul. At least he's following the God of Israel. But it ain't Mitt Romney, the Mormon. If I had to follow somebody, I don't think I'd follow the war candidate, McCain. I think I'd take a look here in the Bible to find out how to conduct a war. And we here in the United States are not conducting war the way God instructed us to. And that's why we got a bad result in Afghanistan and Iraq. Hey, I gotta leave it right there. We'll have to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour now is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling us here at the Law School and asking for it. It's just free of charge. Number to call, 417-273-4967. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.